Maine Secretary of State answers questions about the June 12th election. It's exactly 1 week until Election Day, an Election Day which will make history. For the first time anywhere in the U.S., statewide races will be decided on by ranked choice voting. At the same time, voters will be deciding whether to preserve ranked choice voting. The man in charge of making sure it all goes smoothly and fairly is Secretary of State Matt Dunlap, and he is our guest on today's program. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What are your questions about ranked choice voting? Will it change the way you think about the candidates you support? Do you understand question one, the ballot question about ranked choice voting? Are you concerned about voter fraud or election tampering? Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap takes your questions next. But first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Secretary of State Matthew Dunlap is in high demand these days. Among other things, he is being asked to help explain how ranked choice voting will work, to explain how and why Maine's upcoming elections will be kept fair and safe from outside interference, and to ensure the proper amount of signatures were collected for those seeking public office. Well, today, Secretary Dunlap joins me in our Augusta studio. Welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
And as always, we want to hear from you. This show is about you. What questions do you have about ranked choice voting or about election integrity or anything else that has to do with elections? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Maine Calling Facebook page. Matt, I'm well aware that a lot of people have already voted. How is early voting going so far?
Slow but steady, and that's certainly within the parameters that we expect in a primary election. Primaries in Maine are closed, so only party members can participate in the primaries, although we do have the referendum ballot that's open to any eligible voter to participate in. So turnout's a little bit lower in the primary election than it is certainly in the general election. And our turnout ranges very, very quite widely from like the off-year bond question, which may engender no more than 10 or 15% turnout, to the presidential cycle, where we'll see in excess of 70% turnout of eligible voters. So this is going to fall somewhere in the middle of that range.
Okay. So I think that, and this is related to something you just said, I think there's some confusion about who can vote in this election, maybe because there is so much attention on the primary races. Someone I know said to me recently, oh, I don't vote in this election because I'm not enrolled in a party. So I suspect that you want to make it clear that, yes, every voter can vote because there is a statewide ballot question and in many cases, local races as well.
That's right. And I think the legislature, which has gotten knocked around quite a bit in this entire process about how election laws have been crafted, deserve an enormous amount of credit for making it easy and possible for any eligible American citizen living in the state of Maine to participate in this process. So if you are over 18 or you're 17 and you will be 18 before the election, you can participate in the primary election. Now, the primaries, as I mentioned, are closed, so you have to be enrolled in one of the parties in order to participate in their primary nomination process. But you can register up to and including Election Day. Now, if you're an unenrolled voter, an independent, if you will, you can enroll in a party if you want to participate in the primary. If you don't want to participate in the primary, you can still participate in the election for the referendum ballot. And also, as you mentioned, Jennifer, local elections, which are also happening at the same time. So it's open to any eligible citizen. And an eligible citizen is somebody who is an American citizen, either naturalized or born on American soil, who is at least 18 years old before the general election.
All right. And I know that people on both sides of the question one are really worried that there won't be the voter turnout and that will be somehow skewed. What are you all doing to get the word out, other than coming on Maine Calling to let people know?
This is actually a really important part of how we get the word out, is doing things like interviews on Maine Calling. And Facebook and Twitter have become increasingly important components of how we do public outreach. But, you know, we don't have a very large public service announcement budget. In fact, we don't have one at all. So it kind of is incumbent on us to work with our media partners and folks in the communities to get the word out about the upcoming elections. I think in Maine, we're lucky that our citizens are incredibly engaged and they find the act of voting to be incredibly important. That's why we typically have some of the highest voter turnout in the country. So I'm not too worried about the turnout numbers.
Okay, so let's talk about ranked choice voting. And there are two things I think there really are to talk about. How we're casting our votes, and then the ballot question about it. And I've heard confusion about each. So we'll start with the voting. What can voters expect? The ballot looks like a grid, correct?
That's correct. And we put out sample ballots on our website, and you can check those out for yourself if you're listening at maine.gov/SOS. And look at the upcoming elections tab, and you'll see the sample ballots for both the Republican and Democratic gubernatorial primaries and the Congressional District 2 primary as well. And, you know, when we put those out, we kind of held our breath a little bit because we worked really, really hard on them to make sure we explained them properly. And the questions that we've gotten back were really, really good questions. They're intelligent, thoughtful questions. And it kind of gave us some relief that we weren't confusing people. So from what we've heard from both sides, people who like ranked choice voting and people who don't like ranked choice voting, is that it was pretty simple to figure out. So it is a simple grid. You start, you know, the list of candidates are alphabetical, top to bottom. And your choices 1 through 4 or 1 through 7 go left to right on the grid. And you just mark the oval for the candidate that you want to rank. The most prominent question that we've been getting at all of our public forums is, do I have to rank my choices or can I just vote for one candidate? And under the law and under our rules, you can vote for as many or as few candidates as you wish. You want to just vote for one, you can just vote for one. If you want to vote for all 7 in the Democratic primary and all 4 in the Republican primary, you can do that. Or 2 or 3, whatever your preference is. And this is the important thing that people need to understand, is that the voter controls their ballot. So there are rules. I mean, you can only vote for a candidate one time, so you can't rank, you know, all 4 Republicans as your first choice. That's an overvote. We can't determine voter intent. But you could vote for one candidate in that primary 4 times, but again, it only counts once. We do everything we can to preserve the sanctity of the voter's right to vote. So we want to make sure that their voice is properly heard. And we do try to explain this on the ballot with the instructions.
All right. And also, there's an animated feature film, 5 minutes long, which I've put on our Facebook page. Animated Mad, is that a first?
Well, no, it actually isn't. Kristen Musinski, who does our communication, she's very innovative. And she came to me a couple of years ago with this software that's pretty inexpensive. She said, I think we could do some good stuff with it. And if you've checked out the used car buyer's guide, she actually makes it a lot of fun and it's very informative about how to buy a used car. But she used this for the ranked choice voting instructions as well. And it's been very, very popular. And it's been shared thousands of times, which is it tells us that people are really curious about this. And it explains it very succinctly and well. For me, I'm a visual learner, so it actually even helped me articulate what people should be looking for.
So that explains how votes will be tabulated, but why don't you give us a sort of brief explanation?
Okay, I think the most important thing for the voters to understand is that for them, the process is very simple. You know, you can, like I say, you can vote for one or as many candidates as you wish in the gubernatorial and congressional primaries. There's also a House Republican primary, I think District 75, which is Leeds and Turner and part of Livermore, that also has a 3-way primary that will be using ranked choice voting as well. So you mark your choices, you mark as many as few as you want, you submit your ballot. The election official at the town, you put your ballot in the ballot box, and on election night, the towns are going to be doing very much what they've always done. They're going to only be counting the first place votes. So on election night, we'll still have unofficial results for the first place votes, and that'll give us a pretty strong compass as to whether or not we need to start gathering up the materials to bring to Augusta to do all the rankings. And that's going to be a lot of logistical work to get everything brought to Augusta. And that's going to include 2 components, either the memory devices off the DS-200 tabulating machines that from the towns that use tabulators, or the tamper-proof containers that are locked and sealed in the towns that hand count their ballots. So what we're going to do from there is we're going now there's an important thing that people don't realize, that the tabulating machine counts nothing. It just records the vote. So you get the image of the ballot. It takes a picture of the entire ballot. So we'll download those images onto our main computer, which is not going to be networked to anything, completely standalone. We'll download those images, and then we'll take the ballots, and we're going to run those through a high-speed tabulator that will also give us those images. And we get everything together. Then that computer system will run the algorithm that will give us our rankings. So it's going to take far more time to process the ballots and the images than it will to actually run the tabulation.
After the first vote at the local office, when that disk drive or that lockbox heads to Augusta, is that driven by a police officer?
Well, this is what we talked about a lot with the legislature. Now, this is an aspect of the ranked choice voting initiative that was not addressed in the initiative, is how the process that you go to gather these. Now, the model, of course, is recounts. And under the recount law, state police are charged to have custody of those materials from the town and transit to us. And they actually maintain control of those throughout the entire recount. So when we talked about this early on, we went to public safety and, you know, they said they were willing to help us, but there was no money to do it. We had to find the money from the legislature. The legislature couldn't come to agreement on the funding mechanism. And there was some indication that the executive probably wasn't too keen on letting state police participate in this process, which, you know, put us into what we've called the Apollo 13 scenario, which is you got to figure out how to make it work with what you have on hand. And Mark DeBurge, who does our procurement over at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, said, well, maybe I could ask some of the bonded couriers. And it turned out it was much cheaper. And you still maintain the chain of custody. And chain of custody is really, really important in the integrity of this process. And if you read the report from the ballot tampering scandal of the early 90s, there really was no chain of custody. Clerks would mail their material to the state house. It was kept in a conference room. Nobody was really responsible for it. So it was actually, at the time, it was Secretary of State Bill Diamond who really reformed that process and put the chain of custody steps into place that we still use today that maintain the integrity of that. So as long as we follow those steps, I think that we're in pretty good shape. So we've worked with our vendor, who's going to be the bonded courier picking up this material, and we've worked out the steps that we expect to see happen to make sure we know who is handling a ballot box or a memory device at any given time. And the bottom line here, and I'm probably answering a lot of questions you haven't even thought to ask yet, is that, you know, although this is a new challenge and it's a new way, completely new way to elect people, the baseline from where we're working is really extraordinarily good. We have incredibly devoted and skilled town clerks who care about this process with religious zeal. That's the only way I can describe it. And the laws that we have on custody of ballots and counting materials is very sound and very, very tried and tested. And we have a very high degree of confidence in what we have to work with, so that adding in the ranked choice voting ballot and then this new process is something I think we can control pretty thoroughly.
How and when will results be released? On election night, are folks going to stay up late and watch their television and see results?
Well, they'll see some results. They'll see the preliminary results from the first round. We won't be declaring any winners on election night, unless somebody gets more than 50% of the vote. So if you have one of these candidates that outperforms all the projections and gets 60% of the vote, well, then we're done on primary night. Now, that's possible. It could happen. You know, every election official always hopes for a landslide. You know, the close election always makes everybody a little bit nervous. But, you know, I think that as we get into this and we start getting materials in and we see how long it takes to process things, we're going to be telling people every step of the way where we are, so that there's no mystery. In my experience, when it comes to elections where something is uncertain or unknown, rumor rushes in to fill the void. And so we need to make sure that everybody knows what we're doing in a very transparent way so they trust the outcome of the process.
So I know we've never done this before and you can't answer for sure, but when do you think, based on your experience and polls you've seen, when do you think voters will know who has won the statewide primary?
They'll know as soon as we're done. I mean, I don't know if it's done, but I know I'm done with it, that type of thing. No, it's a little bit hard to discern right now. It could be a few days. It could be a week. I certainly wouldn't want to pin a date down, because then that's writing a check that we're going to have to cash. And all you need is a bad weather event that slows everything down. A bridge gets washed out, or there's a hurricane blows in and the ferries can't get in from the offshore islands and you can't get those materials and it throws everything off.
Okay. Now to question one on the ballot, which has been billed by supporters as the question that will protect ranked choice voting. The wording is confusing.
No, it's not.
What does it ask? And what does a yes or no vote mean?
That's the key thing. I believe you have the question in front of you, and I don't. But it, basically it says, you know, do you want to reject those parts of the new law that would delay implementation of ranked choice voting until 2022 and repeal it if a constitutional amendment is not ratified by the voters by December 1st, 2021?
Not confusing at all.
Well, if you, you know, again, you know,
she says our, facetiously.
Yeah, well, our obligation is to, you know, and this is how we always approach this sort of thing. Despite the popularity of a show like Maine Calling, the reality is that I'm a guy that comes from the working world, and I used to work a lot of double shifts. And there were some broad gaps in my knowledge about what was going on in civic affairs. And, you know, we kind of predicate what we do in terms of writing questions on the idea that somebody's just coming in off a double shift. It's 5 minutes of eight. They're looking at this thing for the first time. They don't subscribe to the newspaper. They don't have a TV. They don't have a radio. But they're a committed American citizen. They want to participate. We want them to be able to read that question and divine what the affirmative effect is of a yes or no vote based on what they read in that question. And some of the feedback I've gotten has been, there's been some negative feedback about this question. And it's all come up very recently. I mean, we wrote the question back in early November as part of the petition. And, you know, one person said to me, why can't you just write something, do you want to continue with ranked choice voting? Except that's not accurate, because that's not what it does. The action that the, because, you know, people's veto questions are necessarily yes means no question. Yes, I want to reject what the legislature did. So what the legislature did, part of, this is the part that's subject to the veto, is that they instituted in the law a delay mechanism that would not implement ranked choice voting until 2022. And if you didn't amend the Constitution to address those concerns as voiced by the Supreme Court in their advisory non-binding opinion, that it would repeal in 2021. That's what they did. So no matter what happens on June 12th, say the no vote prevails, ranked choice voting doesn't go away. It's still the law of the land. It's just delayed until such time as the legislature can take another crack at it. If you vote yes and the veto is sustained, then we're going to be using ranked choice voting for only the federal races in November, because they carved out the state races in that same statute. And that was part they did not seek to veto. So, you know, the joke about how if you're not confused, you're not paying attention really truly applies here, because there's a lot of things that have happened, a lot of moving parts to this.
So if yes is the prevailing vote and question one, in November, even though we voted for gubernatorial primary candidates using the ranked choice voting system, in the general election, we will not be using ranked choice voting for the gubernatorial race.
Only for the federal races. That's correct. And the constitutional concerns, as voiced by the Supreme Court, dealt with the plurality provisions that were adopted by Maine voters in 1880 after a near insurrection over the 1879 election. And, you know, that was something that that the Supreme Court took pretty seriously. And the Supreme Court really hates to wade into this stuff, because this is really legislative. The legislative turf. But they said if somebody were to challenge it based on this, it would probably be found to be unconstitutional. Now, the Constitution is silent on the conduct of primaries in federal elections. That's why we're using it in this context. So, no matter what happens, I mean, I think if the voters ratify the veto, I think that the ship will have left the dock finally. And I think the legislature might feel more compelled to work on some of these issues than they have been because of a simple lack of philosophical agreement over them. If the no vote prevails, it's going to be a heavy left to keep ranked choice voting going, because the signal to the legislature will be voters aren't really interested in it and just let it go by the wayside. That's just, you know, one projection you can make about it.
All right. Well, there's so much more to talk about, Matt, but we have to go to a break. We're talking to Secretary of State Matt Dunlap about next Tuesday's election. Stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Livingston Hughes Surveyors, a Kennebunkport family business for more than two decades and proud supporter of public broadcasting in Maine, livingstonhughes.com. And Maine State Music Theater presenting Million Dollar Quartet, June 6th through June 23rd. Tickets online at msmt.org. And Mercy Hospital, celebrating 100 years in Greater Portland, partnering with the community to deliver the next century of care. MercyHospital.org.
President Trump is holding out hope that he can broker a deal to end the Korean War.
Can you believe that we're talking about the ending of the Korean War? You're talking about 70 years.
I'm Ari Shapiro. A look at what a peace treaty could mean for the U.S.-South Korea alliance and the future of American troops on the peninsula. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered, from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. Both Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Television will be broadcasting our Your Vote 2018 debates this week. Please visit mainepublic.org and click on Your Vote for the complete schedule, including rebroadcasts. All three of our debates, the Republican and Democratic gubernatorial primary contests, as well as the Democratic second congressional seat contest, can be viewed or listened to online right now or anytime up to primary day, Tuesday, June 12th. Don't wait till you're in the voting booth to learn more about where the candidates stand on the important issues and how they compare to each other. Please visit mainepublic.org for Your Vote 2018.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Maine's Secretary of State is with me to talk about the upcoming primary, the use of ranked choice voting, and voting integrity. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we go to questions from the public, though, I want to ask you one more, Matt, and that's the other sort of big election story going on, not necessarily here in Maine, but nationally, is are ballots going to be tampered with? Is the vote, is the outcome of the election going to be an outcome with integrity? What can you tell Maine voters?
Well, I can certainly tell Maine voters that our elections are about as secure as any in the country because we use paper ballots. And, you know, it has been found that jurisdictions that use electronic voting machines might have some issues of vulnerability. But I went down to the Homeland Security as part of a secure briefing, which obviously I can't talk about because it was a secure briefing. And what we learned about it was that we do our job pretty well. In fact, at the end of the briefing, one of the other secretaries held up the secure briefing book and he said, "I hate to tell you all this, but we already know all this stuff." So what we know is that what we do pretty well, that the paper ballots offer a level of security that's really unparalleled to anything in the electronic world. And so people can have a great deal of confidence that when they vote, their vote will be counted and counted accurately.
All right. We'll go to Janet, who's calling from York. Hi, Janet. Go ahead. Janet, are you there?
Hi. Hi, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I did find the question very confusing, and I'm more startled now to find out that it doesn't even count in our gubernatorial election if it goes yes. And if it goes no, it might not count in anything. So I think that's what you said. But my question is, if theoretically our turnout and presidential elections is the biggest, and if the vote went through as a to have ranked choice voting then, and now we have less people maybe voting this time around, it could overturn it with less votes than it got to pass it to begin with. That's my question. Why are we doing
it? It's possible. Right. It's possible. Of course, you know, voter turnout is something that is peculiar to a given election. And, you know, again, you know, you're right. When we had the ratification vote on what was then question five, we had over 70% turnout of eligible voters. And, you know, this is a totally different issue now. We're not talking about up or down on ranked choice voting. What we're talking about is whether or not to maintain the delay mechanism in a people's veto effort. And the scheduled election happens to be the primary election in June. So turnout will be less. But we don't have minimum thresholds for turnout. Some countries do. I've been to countries where if 15% turnout was not reached as a threshold, the election was voided and they'd start over again. Important to remember that term limits was enacted in a year when we had about 13% turnout of eligible voters. That was an off-year election. So regardless of how many people show up, it's still the law of the land, whatever is ratified. And I like to say that the world is run by the people that show up. And that's why we try to get people out to vote.
Two good quotes already today, Matt. The world is run by the people who show up, and every election official always hopes for a landslide. Thank you, Janet, for your question. Bill has sent us an email. I'll ask you several questions. I'll ask you a couple of them. In a three-candidate race, and the voter selects one, two, and three candidate, is it possible that the voter's ballot would be used to endorse the number three candidate? I assume it is highly unlikely, but possible.
Well, it depends on how that voter ranks their choices. You know, if they vote the highest vote getter is their third choice, but it goes through a series of cascades and rankings, and that's that's the vote that survives for the continuing candidate, then yeah, it does count. It only doesn't count is if, say, there's a five-way race and the voter only ranked three and none of those voters continued after the third round, then the ballot's exhausted and it's not counted in the final tally, because that final tally is the majority of the votes that are left on the final round between the last two candidates.
And here's another question I'll ask from Bill. In a three-candidate race and the voter has no interest in two of the three, the voter would select one for their choice. How is the voter to ensure their ballot is not used to endorse the two other candidates?
I don't really understand that question because it can't be. It can't be used to endorse the other two candidates. So if the mechanism that the voter should follow is if they only like one candidate, they should really rank that candidate with their first choice if they want to make sure that that vote is carried through to every round. Now, you can start with your second place. I mean, there very well may be the voter who doesn't really love any of the candidates, and they start ranking with second through, you know, fourth or seventh. And that's possible for the voter to do. The problem is that that will be counted on election night. That's not counted until we start ranking the choices in the central tabulation scenario. So if that one vote doesn't prevail on the first night and doesn't get carried forward and is eliminated, then that ballot is then tabulated as a blank. And so we don't advise people to start ranking with their second choice.
All right. So we're going to go to Rich Livingston, the president of AARP. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks. Our concern is exactly what we've been talking about so far, voter turnout. And it's critically important. It's critically important all the time, maybe especially under these circumstances, an off-year primary. And the process sounds complicated, but I've already voted. And from a voter perspective, it's really a whole lot simpler than it sounds. I think the secretary's done a great job of making the process very user-friendly. I think there is some question about some confusion about the ballot question, but I think it's fair to say, and this is my question, I think it's fair to say that those in favor of preserving ranked choice voting vote yes, those opposed vote no. So it's a case where yes means yes and no means no, which is not always the case, I guess, in ballot questions. But I think the process is very user-friendly, and I really hope that people aren't intimidated by all the chatter and that people really use this as an opportunity, Secretary said, show up and take control.
Well, so thanks a lot, Rich. I mean, some of the feedback we've gotten from both people who are in favor of ranked choice voting and people who are opposed to it have both said, you know, it's a lot simpler than I thought it was going to be. You know, I love it or I still hate it, but the actual ballot layout was a lot simpler than I thought it was going to be. So, and I think getting back to the question about the referendum question, I think one of the reasons why people say it's confusing now is that when we wrote that question, it was very fresh in everybody's minds because the legislature had just taken that action. And everybody who was talking about it at the time was talking about the delay and trigger mechanism. And of course, that was now back in, you know, early November, late October. And so if you forget about that and just skim over that question, it seems a bit confusing. But if you slow down and read it out loud and parse it out, then it makes sense as to what the intent of a yes or no vote is. And that seems to be the feedback that we've been getting lately.
All right, Rich, thanks for calling. And Matt, this election is historic in a couple ways, isn't it? Not only is it the first time any state is doing a statewide election using ranked choice voting, but it is the first time the people's veto has been enacted or used in Maine history, correct?
No, we've used people's vetoes before, but it may be the first time that if it doesn't go well, that a Secretary of State is actually burned alive at the stake. So, you know, we're trying to make sure that it comes off pretty well. But we have used people's vetoes fairly recently in the last few years over the proposal, the Democratic proposal on tax reform, the beverage tax, people's veto, marriage equality, there was a people's veto there. So people's vetoes are not uncommon, but this is the first time that we've used ranked choice voting in a series of statewide elections in one election.
All right. So we'll go to Dick calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Dick. Go ahead.
Hi, Dick Woodbury. I'm actually chair of the Committee for Ranked Choice Voting, and just wanted to call in and make sure that it's absolutely clear to voters that a yes vote is what protects ranked choice voting. because, you know, I know there is some confusion out there about which way people should vote, but it is a yes that it is in favor of ranked choice voting.
I also All right, thanks, Dick, for calling in. Well, Dick Woodbury, thanks so much for calling in. And so, Matt, I want to be very clear. A yes vote protects ranked choice voting for
the general election, for federal races in the general election.
For federal races in the general election and for primary races.
As it's written now.
But it doesn't protect, and I'm putting protect in quotes here, ranked choice voting for every election. And I think people are going to be surprised.
Well, and I think that, and again, I've tried to avoid getting into the rather thorny history about all this and how this has been a very crooked path that ranked choice voting has been walking ever since it was first adopted by the voters. And that, you know, you had the solemn occasion that was requested by the state Senate and the advisory opinion of the justices based on the 1880 amendment to the Constitution that stipulated plurality. And that was after a contested three-way election where no one could figure out who had won. There were legislative races that were being overturned, and under the constitutional construct of the day, it was the legislature that was supposed to determine who the winner of the governor's race was going to be. And you had militias march on the Capitol, and they called Joshua Chamberlain out of retirement. And after that, they said whoever gets the most votes wins. So this is a fairly different way of electing people based on achieving consensus. And it's a very, very innovative approach. But the Constitution may forebode ill tidings if this was challenged in court. And that's what the Supreme Court basically advised. So the legislature responded the way it did. And I think no matter what happens with question one, the legislature still has a lot of work to do on this. This has been the result of several court fights that's taken us to where we are. And our job is to implement it. You know, I'm completely... I don't worry about future lawsuits. In fact, that's one of the questions I've gotten. Aren't there going to be more lawsuits after the election? Well, there might be, but litigation is a part of this process, and it helps us inform where we should be going. And it is confusing to follow, but the simple piece of this is that if you want to see more happen with ranked choice voting, then obviously a yes vote is the way to go. You'll be using it for congressional races in November. If you're completely disenchanted with it, vote no and urge your legislators to take whatever action they see necessary to keep Title 21A the way it is. But I think no matter what happens, as I said, ranked choice voting will be the law of the land until at least December 1st, 2021, regardless of how question one turns out.
Oh, really? So the November election will be what it will be no matter what happens with question one.
No, if question one fails, then we will not have ranked choice voting for the federal election. But, it still will be in place. It just be delayed until 2022.
Gotcha.
And then the legislature will have to take further action. So the last chapter is far from being written on this topic.
All right, Dick, thanks for calling in. We'll move on to Eric, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Hi. I've been following the wording of how ballot questions are worded in Maine for about 30-some years, and reading them very carefully. And I'm a big fan of ranked choice voting. I intend to vote yes to preserve ranked choice voting, protect ranked choice voting. But I have to say that I'm really appalled by how difficult it is to understand the wording of the language in this particular ballot question. I've known very intelligent people who've looked at that and read it carefully and read it twice and read it three times and said, I don't know how to vote on this. So I'm glad that a number of people have said on this radio show already that a yes vote protects ranked choice voting, because I don't think that's crystal clear to a lot of people. And I wish
sure.
there had been a way to make that clearer in the ballot wording.
Thanks, Matt. Anything you want to add to what you've already said?
Well, like I say, I mean, in the currency of the moment, back in early November, I know that the advocates who wanted to get the people's veto on the ballot were quite anxious to get their petition before the election so they could be at the polls on election day. And, you know, we didn't rush the question. We worded the question very carefully to reflect what had happened in the legislature. There was I had 10 days to write the question, which sounds like a long time, but it really isn't with everything else that was going along the November election. And we did get the petition completed 4 days ahead of schedule. And that included the drafting of this question. So, I've had the implication thrown at me already that we've deliberately worded this in a confusing way to try to throw off the voters. And that's absolutely inaccurate. We tried to craft the question in a way that people would understand what a yes or no vote actually meant. And, you know, that all that aside from, you know, what the implications could be, if, like I say, if you read the question carefully, you understand exactly what the net effect is of a yes or no vote. So that's the only explanation I have for it. It had to capture everything the legislature did.
Eric, thank you. I have a really quick question before we go to another break. This is a tweet from David. In California, the ACLU sued the state Secretary of State because mail-in ballots were being thrown out because signatures on the ballot envelope did not match the signature on the registration card and voters were never notified. Can that happen in Maine?
No, that we don't do that in Maine. We certainly, you know, make sure that the ballot envelope is signed. It's uncommon for us to actually try to match up signatures unless there's a question about the validity of the ballot that's been sent in to us. But we try to make sure that every ballot is counted, no matter what the provenance of it is.
All right. Well, we do have to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions for Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap. You're listening to Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine Energy Audit and Insulation Rebates. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And MEMIC, celebrating 25 years of working with employers and employees to reduce workplace injuries. On the web at MEMIC.com.
This November, every American will face a choice.
It's primary season. Let's take stock. Democrats have vowed to take back seats. Republicans count on a strong economy. Divisions are tearing at both political parties, so no outcome is certain. What are the voters saying? I'm Ari Shapiro. Join me later today for a one-hour special, What to Expect in the 2018 Midterms, from NPR News.
Tonight at 9 o'clock, here on Maine Public Radio. Between now and Thursday, June 7th, Maine Public Radio will present a series of special Your Vote 2018 primary candidate profiles in our 2 o'clock hour. On June 12th, Maine voters will choose Democratic and Republican nominees for governor and the Democratic candidate for the second congressional seat. All of these candidate conversations are archived for your convenience at mainepublic.org/yourvote. Along with our debates for on-demand viewing, our television and radio on-air debates schedule, and the latest election news. Our next Your Vote 2018 candidate profile program features Jared Golden and Betsy Sweet. That's coming up shortly at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
But maybe.
Yeah.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, election integrity and ranked choice voting. In our Augusta studio with me, Maine's Secretary of State, Matt Dunlap. We invite you to join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Owen, who is calling from Rockport. Hi, Owen. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you? Hi, Mr. Secretary. This is Owen Casas. I represent Camden, Rockport, and Islesboro in the House of Representatives.
Good afternoon, Representative Casas.
Good afternoon, Mr. Secretary. So, you know, my committee oversees elections and spent a lot of time working on ranked choice voting. One thing that I still haven't gotten an answer for, and I apologize, I haven't asked it in different settings, but when the total, so I represent three municipalities, how is it aggregated? Is it aggregated individually within the municipalities, or is all of the raw data from each three municipalities that I choose or hope to represent get aggregated together and one winner pops out from that? That's one thing I've never gotten a clear answer on.
If you're talking about ranked choice voting in a three-way race, they would be aggregated together. So, and this is the thing about ranked choice voting, which I think may have confused people at first, but now that we've had a couple years to talk about it, you know, the rankings of voters in Caribou may reflect somewhat differently than they would, say, in Kennebunk. So the only way to do like a statewide ranking would be to do it all at one time, get all the ballots together, rank all the choices in one cascade. And that's what we're going to do with the gubernatorial and congressional primaries. Now, we do have a three-way race in a House district, House District 75, Leeds, Turner, part of Livermore. And so we would do the ballots from all those communities, and we'd do them in the same type of cascade. So to answer your question, you would rank them all together, not as individual towns, because you might have candidate A prevailing in one town and candidate B prevailing in another town using the same ranking system, and that would be very confusing to try to sort out.
All right, Owen, thanks for your question. We'll go to Jamie, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for taking my call. To that point, how does a candidate get then to 50%? So you've got all the ballots for the Democratic candidates for governor, and you're going through the second round. Do you count all the second round ballots, or do you hit 50% and stop and not go through the whole, all the ballots?
Well, the way the law is written is that you basically count everything, go through all the rankings until you get down to two candidates, and then it's the candidate that gets the majority of the votes that are left over in the final round. So if a candidate gets 50% plus one in the first round, then it's over. But if you still have continuing candidates in the second round, you can also do batch elimination, and that's if it's mathematically impossible for any candidate, even with all the ballots that are left over, to get enough of them to gain that majority. So then you could drop off several candidates at once if that was mathematically impossible. This is all going to be done by the algorithm. We don't have to do it by hand, thankfully. But certainly when you get to that to the final candidate, or the final two candidates, and say a number of voters don't rank all their choices, which is an entirely valid possibility, and so their ballots would say be exhausted if they only voted for one candidate after the first round, second round, or third round, then it would be the majority of the ballots that were continuing into the final round that would determine who the winner is.
All right, and have you played out all these scenarios? For example, what if there's a tie for last place and you're going to round two?
Well, if you get into not a tie for last place. I mean, both of those candidates would be eliminated. But say you get to the final round, two candidates, and they tie. There actually is a mechanism to deal with that too.
All right, Jamie, thanks for your question. An email from John: ask the Secretary of State if he ever received the materials he sued the Voter Commission for. What did the materials reveal? And this is a question we haven't been really talking about yet on the program, which is you were on President Trump's Voter Fraud Commission, which disbanded, I believe, earlier this year.
Yeah, rather quickly, actually, after we had a federal district court ruling in our favor that said I was, in fact, entitled to get all those working documents and communications, that ruling came down on December 22nd. Subsequent to that, on January 3rd, President Trump dissolved the commission, and then they said that our victory was moot in court because the commission no longer exists. The litigation is ongoing. The district court judge that's been managing this case is managing a lot of other cases that are actually very active and not dealing with dormant commissions. So we are going to get a ruling at some point. We haven't gotten it yet. We suspect that if we do get a ruling in our favor, that we'll see a lot of material that should be pretty eye-opening.
All right. And John, thank you for that email. And I believe Constantino has a related question. Constantino is calling from Westbrook. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, Jennifer. Yes, you're exactly right. I just wanted to thank Mr. Dunlap for his strength and integrity to stand up to Pence and Kobach's sham commission, because, and it will be revealed that that they had nefarious goings on there. So anyway, thank you very much, sir.
Well, thank you. The public support that we got throughout that process was just extraordinary. And all I was really asking for, Jennifer, was what our schedule was and what we were working on. I wasn't asking for, the victory at the Battle of the Mulvian Bridge. But, it tells me just how important elections are to the American public, just based on the intense interest in that process.
We have Dennis on Facebook. Can the secretary tell me if candidate Lynn is still available to be voted for? And remind us of the backstory as well.
Well, that's another long ongoing story, and we are engaged in active litigation on that as well. Max Lynn filed papers to run for United States Senate on March 15th. He was challenged by the campaign of Eric Brakey. I conducted a hearing. I ruled initially that Lynn still had enough valid signatures. The Brakey campaign went to Superior Court. I was compelled to reopen the hearing, take more evidence. That evidence demonstrated that Lynn did not have enough signatures to qualify for the ballot. Mr. Lynn then went to Supreme Court of the state of Maine. The Supreme Court upheld the ruling of both me and the Superior Court, and now Mr. Lynn is going to federal court to force us to count whatever votes are cast for him, because his name was still on the ballot, just that because we had to print the ballots long before the litigation was settled on that. So it's ongoing litigation, so I can't answer that question affirmatively. It would really depend on the federal judge.
All right. Eli on Facebook says, what happens if Santa and all nine reindeer are running for governor? All the voters have a favorite reindeer and evenly split their votes among all nine, approximately 11% each. And all the voters select Santa as their number two choice. So Santa has 100% of the second choices and zero of the first choices. What is the process?
Well, Santa has a strong shot at coming out in the final round. I have to kind of visualize that because sketching this out on paper on live radio is a little bit tricky. But, you know, if every voter, you know, say there are, you know, 10 voters and every voter voted for the nine reindeer and the one Santa, or Santa didn't get any votes but got all the second place votes, then none of the reindeer would prevail in the first round. So we go to the second place rankings. And if they all only got one vote, they would all be dropped off and the second place votes would all go to Santa Claus.
So there is a good chance that somebody who gets a lot of second place votes, maybe not a good chance, but there is a chance somebody who gets predominantly second place votes could end up being the candidate who wins.
That's absolutely true. But again, it depends on how many people give that candidate their second place votes and how many people even ranked a second place vote to begin with.
All right. Well, thanks, Eli, for the question. Creative question. We'll go to Connor calling from Topsom. Hi, Connor. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for having me. As an independent voter and knowing that Maine is quite known for its independent voter population, and that independents are barred from primary elections because they are closed, I'm under the impression that it's the independent voters that would be most likely to use and benefit from a system like ranked choice voting. So how does barring them from this election that will decide whether or not we maintain ranked choice voting in its current fashion, I guess it's just more of a concern in how we tend to deal with that going forward.
Well, that's a question really for the legislature, Connor. You know, it's the legislature that crafts election law, and historically our primaries have been only open to party members. That being said, the door is always open to an independent voter to enroll in a party to participate in that party's primary election. Now, you have to stay in the party for at least 3 months after you enroll. A lot of people don't want to do that. But like we said early on, if you're concerned about ranked choice voting being continued, you can still vote in the election and vote on that ballot and vote on the referendum question. So that is not closed to independent voters. Independent voters will still get that ballot.
Okay, Connor, thank you. We'll go very quickly to Steve calling from Lyman. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm really excited for ranked choice voting. I think it's a great reform to our system that we desperately need and can really make a big impact. But I did want to clarify something. If you rank a candidate as the third choice in a three-way race, that candidate will never get your vote, mathematically speaking, because you would, in the end, if your first person was eliminated, your vote then goes to your second rank, and there would only be two people left, and mathematically speaking, one of those two people would win. So that third person would never get your support.
It depends which candidate you gave your third place to. If you gave your third place candidate, your third place choice to the candidate that was dropped off in the first round, then you're right. But if you gave your third place vote to a candidate that continues, then it does continue as long as that candidate remains viable.
All right. So if you really don't like someone, don't vote for them at all.
That's right.
Okay, Steve, thanks a lot. We just have a few seconds left, Matt. There's so many questions we haven't been able to get to in this hour. If someone has more questions, what do they do?
They can contact us at the email sos.maine. Let's see. Just email me, matthew.dunlap@maine.gov. That's easy. I can never remember the general email inbox. Or you can call us at 626-8400, and we are on Facebook, too. So
and most of the clerks know a lot as well, right?
The clerks have been a little bit nervous about this, but they know a lot about election law, and they can tell you exactly what their role will be.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being here. What an informative program. Secretary of State Matt Dunlap. Sandra Harris ran the board today. We had additional help from Dan Works. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, recognizing and addressing implicit bias. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.